This is the PubRight Podcast, a service of the Arbortex community.
Good morning and welcome to the PubRight Podcast. This morning we've got Todd Nolan from Nortel. Todd is based in Ottawa, Canada. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? Good morning, Todd.
Good morning. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me to the podcast. My name is Todd Nolan, like was shared, and I work in Ottawa for a company that is telecom, in the telecom business, currently in the process of divesting its businesses. But a few years ago, we went through a process of moving towards XML, and I guess that's why Liz has me on this discussion, is to share our experiences in going through that process.
Absolutely, and it's been more than a few years now, I think.
Yeah, it has been. The whole move towards XML really within this company started many years ago with SGML. I think like a lot of companies in this industry and other industries exploring throughout the 90s, move towards SGML and markup language in general. And then, of course, with the inception of XML and later on DITA, that really accelerated the pace, I think, throughout the industry, obviously, for moving towards that.
I'd agree with that. It's been interesting to watch. SGML had all the right things, but didn't quite have the stars aligned quite right, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, there were a few challenges with SGML that we had to overcome, and XML sort of represented that ability to move forward on that. And I think, for us here, it really became important from a business case standpoint to start tying the industry trends of moving towards XML to a solid business case. That we could sell to our management and obviously make sure that our businesses are getting the value out of such a move.
So let's start with the first part of what you were saying. You found you are having issues with SGML that you resolved with XML. What do you mean by that?
Well, I should say that we didn't actually get to the point where we deployed SGML.
Oh, okay.
So I think there was a lot of, and there was a few, certainly there's a few false starts and explorations into SGML, but really the move towards, the timing, I think, for us to move towards markup language really coincided, actually, with the move towards XML in general with the industry.
Interesting. So when did your projects, the first ones, when did you start moving down this road from proprietary to SGML or XML?
I think it really began in earnest once we began to bring together the various development shops in our company into one organization from a documentation standpoint. I think that really gave us the leverage to seriously contemplate or look at deployment of the XML across the company globally. And that started really in the early 2000s, and I was involved in, at that time, some business cases looking at what kind of value we could derive out of moving to XML.
And what kinds of things did you focus on in the business case?
In the business case, really focused on a couple of key areas. One was increasing customer satisfaction. We had some challenges with various systems in place to deliver documentation, and also not only just the systems, but also the format of the documentation was different depending on different product lines, etc. So we had sort of a disparate formatting, different kinds of ways of representing information. So there was some information architecture challenges along with the different systems. So the business case really focused on increasing customer satisfaction and also at the same time reducing costs for by centralizing on a system rather than having multiple systems. So decommissioning legacy repositories and delivery systems was a key component of the business cases.
Out of curiosity, what was the old legacy stuff?
It consisted of a number of a variety of different systems, and largely proprietary systems. We wanted to get away from that as well, reduce the cost of ownership.
Right.
And I think that's where Arbortext really came into the picture. I think for us, from as an XML markup vendor and providing its capabilities to obviously publish its XML content through its publishing engine.
So you're using the editor, the publishing engine, and DLM, if I remember right?
DLM, Dynamic Link Manager. Yes, that's correct.
And you're doing everything, the content management is Documentum.
Yes. So we leverage the API interface in Arbortext Editor to Documentum, mainly to access our modules and do the sharing and reuse of modules in various documents. It acts as, essentially, it's a Documentum menu that you see at the top of your Arbortext Editor interface.
Right. And they can browse into the content and pick topics and...
That is right.
Very nice.
Pick topics, put them into a variety of different documents, and by doing it through the Arbortext menu, it acts as essentially the interface point between Arbortext and Documentum. Gives the ability for Documentum to understand that Arbortext in the Arbortext editor, someone is inserting the module for reuse purposes, and in Documentum we can track that.
Wow, what kinds of things were you? What other things were you tracking? Just interested.
So largely it was the modules. Tracking the sharing of modules across different documents.
And so that would give you an idea of volume of reuse?
No, not so much of the volume or metrics-wise, but more to understanding, as people are putting documents together, to understand where the modules are being reused. We have a very high percentage of reuse in our content, the nature of the products that we were developing here. There's various software platforms that were... being developed and being shared and reused in the product world across different products. So that loaned itself to having a lot of reuse of documentation modules in various projects. So it became very important for the writing community to be able to locate these modules in Documentum, insert them, and make sure that, for example, you had an understanding of what was being reused here, reused there. And with the combination of hypertext linking in Dynamic Link Manager, making sure that we had unique identifiers assigned against all of the links and the targets in that content. So it really sort of came all together with the Arbortext Editor in conjunction with DLM and Documentum.
Very interesting. So they were when a writer would start with a new project, they would be able to sort of configure it starting out early based on what engineering had done.
Yes.
Ah, that's very cool.
Yeah, and through the information architecture standards that our information architecture team was establishing, they would, follow best practices in terms of the authoring, and a lot of that aligned to the data concepts that were out in the real world, and our DTD, which was developed as a proprietary DTD early on, because when we really got the project off from a production standpoint, it was around 2004-2005 timeframe, and data was a little bit early in its inception, its rollout, and we found the vendor support wasn't quite there, and we needed to have topic-oriented writing just to support the amount of reuse we were doing.
Right.
So we ended up doing the development of a proprietary DTD to that was very data-like, but it got around some constraints that we had in, for example, in documents, and that's really how the structure sort of evolved from there.
Wow. Do you remember sort of any what those constraints were?
The biggest one from a Documentum standpoint, we're using Documentum 5.x, was around the use of maps. Documentum didn't allow us to use maps in a way, in an XML valid way. So Documentum had its own methods for managing what it calls virtual documents,
which
you consider a map with a bunch of modules in it.
Interesting. I remember looking at the virtual document and not quite thinking it was doing what I wanted. Like it seemed like it could, but it wasn't quite there.
Yeah. So we kind of molded out of that sort of baseline. We molded what we needed out of it, and developed a DTD that would work in a very data-like way, but yet was able to work in the constraints that Documentum 5 presented to us.
Ah, that's very cool. And when you were starting out, your team was fairly large, and you were supporting lots of writers?
Yes. The organization had several hundred writers. Early on, the bulk of the writing was being done in-house. One of the keys to the flexibility of the system was it was a global enterprise content management system run 24/7 around the clock and with access points around the world. So we were able to leverage that to increase our vendor writing, so getting the writing from out of house, and accessing the system from around the world. And, of course, that from business standpoint, that helped us to reduce costs from a writing standpoint.
Wow. So and that probably was part of the business case from the beginning, sounds like.
Actually, I really can't say that it was. It was one of those ancillary benefits that we saw coming later on. It wasn't really up front identified as one of those, specified per se, although reduction in formatting, eliminating formatting by moving to an XML system and increasing reuse. Those were the keys in the original business case.
So, and are you supporting multiple languages?
Currently, we have multiple languages, but they're supported outside the system. That was going to be an evolution eventually with this system to leverage the different standards in translation and XML, but we never did get there.
That's a shame.
It is very much a shame. We really wanted to leverage those capabilities, but unfortunately we ran out of time.
That's sometimes how it goes, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So now you've got how many writers, and it's you're the support team now?
I am the support team. Yeah, we had at the beginning of the program, we had a core of combination of business primes and IT experts involved in the development and rollout of the system. And at that time, going back 5-6 years ago, there were a number of things that had to be done. We had to put, of course, the Arbortext environment in place, the Documentum XML repositories in place, do data conversion of a whole lot of content, and get that up and running in conjunction with rolling out new processes for the writing staff to use. So it was a big effort up front, and at that time, we had a core team probably of about 8 or 10 people.
That's a good size.
Various primes doing development of DTDs. In conjunction with some vendors, and style sheets, rolling out the processes, doing training. That was a big piece of the rollout, of course, was to train all the writers on the new systems and the new processes, and make sure that all hooked up nicely with our information architecture discipline as well.
Right. So how did you roll out training? You had in-house writers to start with, and then you had external writers. How did that work out both ways?
Well, it was probably a little bit of a rough road at first. We found the system, while based on solid requirements, had some holes in it at first that we hadn't quite anticipated. So there was a little bit of laying the brickwork in front of us as we were moving along the process of rolling out. So we had some challenges there. And in terms of training, we put in place a combination of training, doing instructor-led training, so having people sign up for courses internally
Wow.
to learn the system. Being part of a training and documentation organization, we had a lot of that infrastructure available to us to leverage to have courses scheduled and people attending.
Wow.
In
And was
addition to some self-paced stuff that
Wow.
we had some of our primes develop some self-paced training as well, showing them key aspects, both well from an introductory standpoint and learning Arbortext, learning the DTD, and how to use the various elements, right up to certain sort of more particular aspects of Dynamic Link Manager and how to make sure you avoid some certain pitfalls in using the various tools.
So was it just Tech Pubs using it, or you also had a training organization that was using it?
We had Tech Pubs using it and still using it today. We were planning to make a connection from a reuse standpoint between our training and documentation repositories. And so that was one of the nice things that this system evolved or enabled us to evolve into, was putting a pipeline of reuse going on between our training learning content management system, LCMS there, and we had plans underway for that as well. Unfortunately, again, sort of like the translations, that didn't get to fruition, but certainly we had the means to
Wow.
move forward with that kind of sharing of information between courseware and Tech Pubs.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so the team evolved that way, and then with the recent downsizings in our corporation, it's now down to myself supporting both the documentation and training, the LCMS as well, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
So that one of the benefits obviously becomes how effective it is for us to manage large scale content with an enterprise system like this, and just how cheaply it can be run from a maintenance standpoint.
Wow, and so how many people are you supporting then now?
Approximately 400 writers today.
Wow.
With a large like majority percentage of that being out of the corporation by vending corporations. So people who are companies that are providing us with the writing services, they access through our firewall and IT infrastructure the Documentum, Arbortext components of the system.
How much content would you say there is now?
Well, on our portal, we've published, there is approximately 6 million pages of information published.
Oh
Now,
my God.
not all of that has come from our XML environment, but a growing percentage of that is. It's hard to put a number on that. I don't have any stats available to that, but we have in our repository today several thousand publications active.
Oh my goodness. That's, I mean, 6 million. Wow. I mean,
Those are big numbers.
they are huge numbers. They're not, you don't really hear that outside of, big military or long time airline numbers. And you're managing all of that with you and an automated publishing system. I think that's
Yes.
great.
That is great. Thank you. And I do think that is great. I think that's the again the magic of having a not to repeat myself, but the magic of having an enterprise content management system with all the process and again, focusing on a single process. I think that and a single set of tools to manage
Right.
that process.
So, you know, I love it. I want to say it again, actually, like at the risk of repeating myself. I personally love to hear that it's working so well for you and has been for some time. When would you say that you were pretty close to basically, you know, production ready? You didn't have to do a lot more tweaking to style sheets in the system, and it was pretty much ready to run.
I think from the time we started rolling out of the program to the time to that point in time was about 3 years.
That's not too bad.
It wasn't too bad, and then really we started instituting some discipline around change management. Put that in place to make sure we were understanding any kind of changes, because we got to the point of diminishing returns with our enhancements and style sheets, and really wanted to understand any further changes needed to be agreed upon across multiple organizations who are using the system, and making sure that we had a good solid case behind making those changes. But having that change management system in place and tying that again to your information architecture community, and having those forums for discussion and sharing of information, that was another key point of maintaining the system in a really, really good, clean way, and in a really consistent way that kept things running, humming really nicely. That was a really key point of that.
So I'm going to come back to that. You said you reached a point of diminishing returns for the style sheet. What do you mean by that?
I think, well, the style sheet issues we had in the first 3 years were largely, they were bugs. We had challenges in rolling out all of the features that we wanted in our style sheet. Our style sheet's probably in the medium to high complexity range.
Okay.
And so we had things like rotating tables,
Oh.
that kind of stuff, especially in our PDF style sheets. There was that kind of complexity. Also in the online help area, there was a lot of work done the first couple or 3 years to roll out several flavors. We have Java Help, a couple of variants of Java Help. So publishing to those channels from our XML environment, and using Publishing Engine in Arbortext to do that. So has some style sheet development going on there, and getting that right. That was some there were some challenges there too. But largely just the nitty-gritty details of implementing the correct styling
Right.
in our output.
Still staying with this. So the pr what outputs were you what how many multi-channel how many channels were you delivering to?
Okay, good question. We had so we have and I can answer that in sort of different dimensions, but really
Good.
from a format standpoint.
Yeah.
We had PDF, some HTML, Java Help as well. Those were sort of the three key sort of formats we had going. Now, of course, we had delivery going on through our web portal, our CD-ROM production process, and also some limited paper delivery as well. But largely the delivery of the content was through our portal, and last but not least, is directly on the product itself in the form of context-sensitive help.
Nice. So was it, did it go right back into the software?
Yes. So again,
Ah, nice.
writers had that ability to with in conjunction working in conjunction, of course, with the product design and folks to make sure that everything was being implemented as needed to be on the software, but they had the ability to put that documentation directly on the product, work in conjunction with the designers to, for example, put the hooks from the software, the context-sensitive hooks from the software in our XML, and then
Ah.
publishing that to say Java Help, and having that put as part of a software build, and test, of course, going through their test process, and right through to roll out to the customers.
Wow, that's beautiful. I mean, it really is.
We had also the converse happening as well, so information coming from our product, so reference-based type information. In telecom, the alarms type information being extracted from the software, and so having going through a series of transforms to get into our authoring DTD, and then to publish that content as well on our portal.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a really cool piece of that that whole system, and making sure that gets out on a regular basis, that the customers really, really appreciated having that kind of easy reference directly on our portal to our alarm information.
Absolutely. That's ever-changing face of documentation. I know that's the first place I go when I'm looking for anything.
Exactly.
Wow, that is incredible. Yeah. I mean, things going into documentation, out of documentation, were there any other places where you were generating content one way or the other?
I can't say. I think that really covers most of the bases,
wow.
But we had a lot of, there was a lot, and again, that's one of the beauties of moving to XML, and was having that the kind of flexibility. Ultimately, back about 5 years ago, of course, or 10 years ago, wireless markup language was a real popular thing, and that was something we were going to move towards.
Right.
I don't know that today that's really such a high runner for us in terms of requirements, because really the advent of the advance of such portable devices has gotten to the point now where they just simply download stuff off the web anyway.
Basically.
Yeah. So
more bandwidth for us all.
Yeah, but we could have done that as well. We could have had transforms in place for outputting to wireless markup language, for example.
So when we say you had publishing engine, with various components, right? You probably had Print Composer, Web Wireless.
Largely it was Publishing Engine, even without it was a publishing engine that was operating in an enterprise environment. So
okay.
we had a couple of them running on Solaris servers, and the writer's access these straight from the interface and just simply publish their content from editor through the PE server and get their output, of course, right on the desktop. So there was no need for a number of Print Composer licenses, for example, when you have just the one PE server license.
Mm-hmm. So you had the big PE.
The big PE, yes, exactly. A couple of them.
Yeah. A couple of them, indeed.
For redundancy and ensuring that, you know, obviously if one was up, if one was down, the other one was up, and having that capability. We also at one point had more or less load balance between our external staff and our internal staff, just to spread things out a bit.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. And did you guys end up going down the profiling route?
Quite heavily. Right. Yeah, that's a great topic in its own right. profiling was a means for the writers, still is a means for our writers to manage the multiple versions of information that go through our documents, and considered one of the methods for what we've internally used as a term is multi-streaming. So it's basically the streaming of multiple versions, multiple software releases of information through our documents, and profiling was a key aspect of that. So we had profiles. We still have profiles updated on a weekly basis, and that's centralized. We have a couple of profile configuration files that are updated on a weekly basis. We get requests from the authoring community through a ticket system. We'll validate those requests, put them on the server, and the next evening we have a regular reboot cycle where we restart the publishing engine, and it makes available these profiles for the authors to access and use for publishing.
Wow.
So again, that's a very disciplined method for managing the profiling and keep some sanity in place around.
Absolutely. So what does the deployment look like? Because some of it's on the client, some of it's, it looks like it's easy to deploy when you're rolling out things like this.
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like?
What does it look like? So on the client, you'll see if you go to the, I'm not sure if I have the menus right, but if you go to the, I think it's the edit menu. you'll see a profile submenu. And
Oh,
in there,
yeah, no, I know. Sorry. Sorry, Roger.
Mm-hmm.
No, what I meant is sort of what does your deployment architecture look like, right? Because do the writers have to copy that stuff down? Does it automatically deploy to their desktops?
Oh, I see. Yeah, I can talk about that.
That's kind of what I mean. All right. Go ahead.
Okay, so yeah, the way that this is rolled out is the profile files, profile configuration files get loaded into Documentum and are automatically available the next time an author checks out a document. So when an author checks out a document from Documentum onto their desktop, those profile configuration files, along with the DTD and some editing style sheets, get downloaded every time to their desktop. Any changes that are in the system will come down to their desktop. And so they'll have available to them the profile information up to date whenever we've updated that in the system. And then in conjunction with the weekly restarts that we have on our PE servers,
Right.
we have that stuff rolled out to the PE servers on a weekly basis so that they actually can leverage those profiles through their publishing and get that using the profiles in their PDF output, HTML, etc.
Wow, that is rockin' cool.
Yeah, it is rocking cool. I agree.
Oh my goodness. Well, so let's bring it back around a little bit now, because
Sure.
we have a wide range of people listening. What would be your advice for somebody who is thinking about getting started and wanting to try to convince people to do that at where they are?
Well, I have to say, right off the top, you really have to. It all comes down to requirements and business justification, and getting, focusing on the key elements of an XML, a structured writing environment that will bring the most benefit to your business. To look at those aspects, break out what is the benefits, both in terms of soft and hard, dollars. What is the return on that, and then getting down to requirements analysis and some good old-fashioned use casing, making sure that the requirements are well elaborated right up front as much as you can, and then of course the key thing is to get that funding, and I think that's the point where you really the rubber hits the road, and you really have to you really start moving towards putting into place a program and a team to implement on the requirements.
What kind of team, what kind of skills need to be on your team?
I think you need a variety of skills, and having some experience in structured authoring, people who are good at training, people who are good at project management as well. You need some really good project managers in place to track the rollout of the system, and work certainly in a corporate environment, typically with the kind of systems we've implemented with various groups, including IT. So having that sort of skill set to work multidisciplinary across multiple functions in a corporate environment, that really helps a lot. And some good old-fashioned technical know-how is really what it comes down to.
That's great. That's a good description, and absolutely. Folks who are willing to play.
Exactly.
We could probably talk all day about how the writers made that transition early on and over time, and but
There's a lot of nuances just in that aspect. That's for sure. But the good news is that there is a light at the end of that tunnel, and there are always times in a project like this big that over multiple years that can look really dark. But some perseverance will get you through.
Excellent. Great advice and a well sum up way to put it.
Okay.
Stick it out. There is a return in the end, and you just need to get there.
Exactly.
Great. I appreciate it. Thank you, Todd, so much for spending time with us today, and I appreciate you're telling us all about what you achieved there at Nortel.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
The PubRide Podcast is a production of Single Sourcing Solutions in San Jose, California. Copyright 2009. Single Sourcing Solutions.